Hello and welcome to this edition of the Lancet Infectious Diseases podcast. I'm Hannah Cagney. Today I will be talking to Dr. Yonatan Grad, who is the lead author of a study about the genomic epidemiology of antibiotic-resistant gonorrhea in the USA. Here he is introducing himself.
Hi, I'm Yonatan Grad. I work in the Center for Communicable Disease Dynamics at the Harvard School of Public Health. And I'm also an infectious disease physician in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Brigham and Women's Hospital, Harvard Medical School here in Boston, Massachusetts.
So, Dr. Grad, antibiotic resistance has been in the news a lot lately. Is the problem in gonorrhea something new, and is it limited to the USA?
Antibiotic resistance has been in the news a lot recently as pathogens resistant to our available antibiotics continue to proliferate and threaten our ability to treat and cure infections. It's really a global problem, as resistant bacteria that emerge in one location can then spread everywhere in the globe. Neisseria gonorrhea, or the gonococcus, the bacterium that causes gonorrhea, has actually been developing resistance ever since we started treating it with antibiotics, dating back to the first uses of antibiotics in the late 1930s. And it subsequently developed resistance sequentially to each of the first-line antibiotics used to treat it. And we are now left with only one recommended first-line treatment. The backbone of this treatment is ceftriaxone, a drug in the class of antibiotics called extended-spectrum cephalosporins. The challenge we face is that we have seen growing resistance to this class of antibiotics in gonorrhea. The antibiotic cefixime is a cephalosporin related to ceftriaxone, but it's administered as a pill, whereas ceftriaxone is delivered via injection. Now, because of rising resistance in gonorrhea to cefixime across the globe, cefixime is no longer recommended as a first-line therapy. In a sense, it's kind of the most recent casualty of growing antibiotic resistance in gonococcus. There have also been a small number of cases of gonorrhea resistant to ceftriaxone reported several places in the world, including Japan, France, and Spain. So we are concerned about the possibility of resistance to ceftriaxone emerging and spreading, and this is something that can happen across the globe. So we're focusing our effort now on what we can do to slow or contain its spread in the absence of new antibiotic treatments.
You used genomic epidemiology to study antibiotic resistance in gonorrhea in the USA. Can you tell me a bit more about the technique you used?
Sure. So I'll take a step back first and describe molecular epidemiology more generally. So molecular epidemiology seeks to use genetic and other markers to track how pathogens spread through a population. And then in combination with traditional epidemiological methods of monitoring disease incidence and prevalence, it helps us to study and understand a lot about infectious diseases, including transmission networks, infectiousness, outbreaks, the interactions between pathogens and people, and the ecology of the pathogens themselves. Molecular typing approaches historically have used small parts of the genome to define strains and track them. As technology has advanced and genome sequencing has become cheaper, we are able to sequence the whole genome of pathogens rather than just small fractions of the genome. And we're actually able now to do so for not just a single genome, but tens or hundreds or even thousands of samples at a reasonable cost. The whole genome sequence gives us a much better resolution in terms of defining strains, but it also gives us much more than that. Genome sequences are increasingly critical components of data associated with outbreaks and transmission of infection. They carry ecological and evolutionary history of the pathogens. They reflect information about the niches that these pathogens inhabit and the impact of interventions that they're subject to, such as vaccination and antibiotic therapies. And they inform on virtually every parameter of transmission dynamics, including the infectiousness of the pathogen, the transmission networks to deduce the chain of infection, and more broadly, the spread of these pathogens geographically and through various demographic networks. Genomic epidemiology has been used to gain insight into the spread of pathogens in a number of contexts recently. These include understanding how cholera spread to Haiti, the evolution and spread of pandemic influenza, and then more recently, the highly pathogenic respiratory viruses like influenza H7N9 and MERS-CoV. It's also been useful in understanding outbreaks of very resistant infections in hospitals, such as an MRSA outbreak in a special care baby unit in the UK and an outbreak of a highly resistant gram-negative rod Klebsiella at the NIH Clinical Center in the U.S. And it's also been useful in understanding the pattern of spread of organisms both in hospital or healthcare settings and through the community with TB and Clostridium difficile. Our paper is really the first example of using these methods to understand the spread of gonorrhea.
Thank you. In your study, you obtained samples from men with gonorrhea who attended sexual health clinics in US cities. Can you tell me what your analysis of these samples showed?
So when we started this study, we had a number of questions about resistant gonorrhea. We wondered whether resistance emerges frequently and independently in many places, or whether resistant isolates the resistant isolates that we see are related to one another and represent spread of a successful, specific successful strain. We were also interested in whether we could identify the genetic basis for this resistance. To answer these questions, we worked in collaboration with the CDC and used samples from their Sentinel surveillance system that monitors antibiotic resistance in gonorrhea in the U.S. We used samples from the years 2009 to 2010, drawn, as you mentioned, from sexual health clinics, public sexual health clinics across the U.S. By sequencing these isolates, which we did in collaboration with the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute, and determining the genetic relatedness of these isolates, we could answer our first question, and that was that it looked like the spread of isolates with reduced susceptibility to cefixime in the U.S. in this time period was predominantly due to the spread of two lineages, and not that resistance was appearing many times de novo in many places. When we then examined the genes known to be involved in resistance to cephalosporins, we saw that almost all of the isolates with reduced susceptibility to cefixime shared the same allele at a genetic locus called PenA, which codes for a protein called penicillin binding protein 2. And this suggests that, at least in the population in our study, the presence of this particular genetic sequence has a high positive predictive value for reduced susceptibility to cefixime.
As a comparator, you use cefixime-susceptible isolates that were resistant to other types of antibiotics. Why did you use these samples, and what do your findings tell us about resistance to antibiotics other than cefixime?
We used those samples for a few reasons. First, we were interested in what the background genetic diversity of gonococcus looked like, but there were no previous genomic epidemiology studies of gonorrhea. Second, we were interested in asking about what distinguished the isolates with reduced susceptibility to cefixime. And to do so, we needed fully susceptible isolates for comparison. Now, the isolates that were available to us for this comparison that had full susceptibility to cefixime had other features of interest. As you mentioned, they were resistant to one or more other antibiotics. And the ones we were particularly interested in were ciprofloxacin and azithromycin. We were interested in these two because for azithromycin, it's part of the first-line treatment regimen together with the injectable cephalosporin ceftriaxone, as I mentioned before. And then we were interested in ciprofloxacin as it used to be a first-line treatment used for gonorrhea, and it may still actually be useful for many cases in the U.S. What we learned was that one of the lineages with reduced susceptibility to cefixime in the U.S. is also resistant to ciprofloxacin, but the other lineage with reduced susceptibility to cefixime is fully susceptible to cipro. This suggests that if we have a rapid molecular test for ciprofloxacin susceptibility, there might still be occasions where it would be an appropriate choice for treatment. We also saw that there is a lineage of isolates with reduced susceptibility to azithromycin spread throughout the U.S. Now, this wasn't a study that was focused on azithromycin, so it's hard to say much about this other than it appears that there is already a reservoir of resistance to azithromycin in the United States. Now that Zithro is part of the recommended treatment regimen for gonococcal infections, it will be really important to continue to monitor the extent of resistance and whether this resistance population grows.
So what can your findings tell us about the spread of cefixime-resistant gonorrhea across the USA?
The motivating question we had was, if we find a case of very resistant infection, in which individuals or in which groups of people would we expect to find it next? And so we were really interested in how gonococcus spreads through the U.S. or through what types of networks. So this type of information could be really useful from a public health perspective, as it could help focus public health surveillance and interventions and ideally help us slow or contain the spread of resistance. We were interested in trying to use information from our data to investigate this question. So for each of our samples, we knew the location and date of isolation, as well as the sexual orientation of the infected individual. So using those data, together with our phylogenetic reconstruction of the relatedness, the historical relatedness of one of our clusters of isolates with reduced susceptibility to cefixime, we generated a model of how this lineage may have spread through the U.S. The inference based on this model suggests that this particular lineage circulated mostly on the west coast of the U.S. In a population of men who have sex with men, with occasional introductions into the heterosexual community and occasional spread eastward through the U.S. It's important to point out that there are limitations to our data. It's one slice of time from 2009 to 2010, and the sampling could be biased by the fact that our data came from men who visit public STD clinics, and our phylogenetic reconstruction should be understood as a model and not necessarily the definitively true history. But at the same time, I think our findings are supported and actually extend data from other epidemiological analysis and help provide insight into how this resistant strain is spreading.
How can whole genome sequencing help public health officials to recognize and address outbreaks of gonorrhea?
So there's a lot of excitement about the potential role of sequencing of pathogen genomes in public health microbiology, as this information can be used to help identify outbreaks and in disease surveillance. As we talked about above, it's been used in a number of different settings. For gonorrhea, I think our work should be considered exploratory, but it suggests that genomic epidemiology may be useful in identifying outbreaks, and through understanding the networks through which gonorrhea spreads through communities may be useful in efficiently focusing resources for surveillance, prevention, and intervention. There are obstacles to doing so, including the capacity for culturing gonococcus, the availability of tools to do genome sequencing in local public health institutions, and the need to standardize and make easily accessible the computational methods to analyze the data. But I believe that these are challenges that can be addressed really in the near future, and it's an exciting time to investigate applying these methods to gonorrhea control.
What a fascinating study on a really important infectious disease. Dr. Grad, thank you so much for talking with me. To read Dr. Grad's